This week on the Indo Daily.
People just trampled over me. Like nobody stopped to see this baby is on her own. I was found walking. A fireman found me.
It was a massive shock, I think, to people in and out of the golfing world. They appear to everyone as the golden couple.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found five big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, what an ending that was to the Women's Six Nations for Ireland. They finished third in the table. They got automatic qualification for next year's World Cup with that 15-12 win over Scotland and on Saturday. And they've got landed with the prize of Tier 1 of the WXB, where they'll play the likes of England again, who are crowned Grand Slam champions for the third year in a row. I'm Sinead Kazan and I'm joined by Anna Capeless and Ali Donnelly. Anna, to you first. First, you've soldiered with Ireland. There have been years of hurt, the failure to qualify for the last World Cup, the wooden spoon last year, and then along comes a day like Saturday in Belfast.
I can't believe it. And I'm pretty sure the players are kind of the same. It hasn't actually sunk in yet. I was speaking to a few of them and, you know, I just sitting back and looking at the table. And when I woke up on Sunday, I had to be like, was that a dream? Do you know, like, is this actually happening? Like, I emotionally seeing the qualified, you know, posts is so huge. I don't, words will fail me to say how much this means. And, you know, for the players, I honestly can't believe. But I'm still wrapping my head around it. There's an awful lot of work to do, obviously, and an awful lot of things to look at. But I just didn't think that we would qualify so soon. And it's brilliant. All credit to the girls, like, for getting the win. And, like, you know, even the things we've talked about, the management and the different kind of approaches to things, it's really nice. And it's really, I couldn't be happier for that we are starting a world qualification, our World Cup process preparation today, this morning. It's unbelievable.
Ali, you were watching in Bordeaux. You were at the France-England game. How was that? And, you know, did the shock factor reach over there as well with what Ireland pulled off on Saturday?
Yeah, like, I got to the ground really early so I could watch it there with my headphones on and was by myself pretty much. I mean, I spent a lot of the match putting my hands in my head because we made so many mistakes, and the first half wasn't the best game of rugby, I think we could say. I think, to Anna's point, there's two ways of looking at this now. One is exactly the huge boost it gives to the programme in Ireland because they can prepare for the World Cup now. They don't have to think about that. They know they're there. The other, though, is to keep our feet in the ground because, you know, it only required two wins to come third. So I think the gulf between the top two and the rest is significant. You know, it's very unusual that the third team was beaten, you know, leaked 80 points to the first team. That's where the tournament's at. So it is a brilliant achievement. I think it's a massive achievement, actually, to qualify. We'll go into WXV1 in a minute. And to end on a win, I think that's huge, to just end the tournament positively after last week. But there is hard work ahead for us. But I think, I suspect the coaches are absolutely thrilled that they can now plan out the next 18 months, and they don't have to, you know, when Scotland didn't, took ages for them to qualify for the last World Cup, you know, that really took it out of them, having to play Colombia and go to these unusual places to play qualifiers. So, yeah, a huge boost, but I think feet on the ground now, because, you know, we're certainly like a work in progress, aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, completely. Like, and to that, like, you know, what I was thinking of was, you know, a set piece, for example. There's a million things we can look at here, but like, okay, line out, what do we do? Who is the best line out coach in Ireland? What can they do for us? Who, you know, not just the players, but the coaches. How do we upskill the coaches? What are we going to do about that to get, you know, there's no time to waste here. If you qualify this early, start your project now. You know, how good can you get in a year? You know, there's still WXV. Do you know what's kind of lucky for Ireland is what Wales have gone through will keep their feet on the ground, because getting thrashed in WXV1 obviously didn't help them. It's interesting that kind of last week we had to almost throw the English performance in the bin. I think now we can take it out of the bin and be like, okay, let's use this now. Now we can do our homework on this, because this is who we're playing later this year. You know, like what do we do? Where do we take it from here?
Yeah, and so let's just get into that tier one, Ali. I mean, as you said, we spoke about Wales being that kind of test case and what happened to them since they played in tier one last year. Like, it is just too much too soon, I feel. And I think the last thing this team needs right now is to be playing games that will damage their confidence or their belief in what they're doing. Maybe I'm overplaying that. I just feel that playing in tier two against the likes of Scotland and Italy would have been so much more beneficial for where this team is at right now. What do you think, Ali?
100%. It is a bit too much too soon, but we're in it now. And all we can do is, exactly as you said, Anna, learn from that Wales experience where it seemed to just drain all the confidence out of the team. And then they came into the Six Nations just a shell of themselves. And they looked like they'd completely forgotten how to win. I mean, the WXV is badly structured. It's a good idea. I think executed poorly right now, needs to be restructured in the next year or so. And I think that's going to happen. So we might get a bit lucky in the way the cross-pool system works. We won't play every team in WXV1. So imagine we're going to have probably England, New Zealand, France, Canada, probably Australia and ourselves. That'll be, I would imagine, the mix. I think USA will get knocked out of that Pac 4 group. So they're the teams we're going to play. You're not going to have to play all of them. And so it might be that you play a France and an Australia, or you play an England and a France or whatever, and a Canada. So it might be that you're not having to like turn up to play the Black Ferns, followed by England, followed by France. So let's see what happens with the fixtures. It is too soon for us, but they've got 8-9 months now to get that into their brains, haven't they? Right. This is who we're playing. This is where it's going to be. And we've seen a team go through this process in the exact same case as us and not do well out of it. So what can we do as a group to negate the fact that we're probably not going to beat some of these teams? So I guess the benefit is, you know what's coming, and someone's already been through the ringer for you to teach you perhaps what not to do, maybe.
Yeah. Before we get into what Ireland kind of needs to do over the next, whatever it is, 16 months, let's just quickly go back to that game on Saturday. And Ali, as you were saying, like it was very much in the first half, you know, head in hands time, 5-0 down at halftime. It was a forgettable first half. It was like that Italy game with the amount of mistakes, the decision-making, the decision to keep going for the line-out before halftime. I mean, and also they just need to bring in a tap and go, like going for the line out, which has been malfunctioning. I don't understand what the thinking was there. But they did come out a different team in the second half. Katie Corrigan and Clean Maloney scored the tries. They hit the front from Dan O'Brien with her penalty. Grandstand finish then. And Anna, they were so impressive in defence at the end. But what were you like? Were you head in hands as well watching this?
Yeah, it was like they were trying everything not to get into WXV1. But yeah, I know. So yeah, head in hands, but still kind of thinking that Scotland are scared of Ireland. And I could tell by them that they were really trying to stay upbeat. And, you know, they were smiling and like, we're going to enjoy this, we're going to make the most. I just felt like that could have been shaken so easily. And it was. And Ireland were able to just dig their heels in like somehow. And, you know, we say, you know, takes a good team to win, even when you make mistakes, like as many mistakes as that, and decision-making, et cetera, which is all these other factors, like the fact that they were able to like manage the win is huge. And I know before the weekend, I almost felt like I was trying to kind of prepare myself, like, look, it doesn't matter what the result is, as long as we perform well. And it's weird now that they got the win and the performance wasn't really there. So it's kind of a strange one to kind of look back on, to be such on kind of cloud nine with the qualification, but not have had the performance that we wanted. But, you know, it's just the way the tournament goes, you know, like, again, really wanting another crack off Italy, for example, or Wales probably wanting another crack off us, like that middle of the table stuff, which literally went either way. You know, which then ended up with us like taking the bonus points that were so valuable. It's just a weird one to try and enjoy, but we just have to.
Yeah, Ali.
Yeah, I think the best thing about, I mean, it wasn't a good game, right? It was not a good game. It wasn't fun to watch. Both teams made loads of errors, and you know, looked almost nervous to try anything in case they lost. But the best thing about it was, we clearly have learned from the Italy game, and we found a way to win, which we couldn't do in that game, because they were not too dissimilar games, actually, in terms of how the flow of it went. So, you know, put aside the anomaly that is England, we've learned through the tournament what we need to do in games that are tight and how we need to come back from behind. And so that to me was a real positive, because this is quite a, you know, it's not an incredibly young team in transition, but there is a core of youth in there that clearly are learning on the job. And if you're a coach, that's what you want, right? So like the best thing about Ireland, I think, for this tournament is we've ended it well in third place, but with loads of things to work on. You know, I'd say if we were 2 out of 3 out of 10 last year, we're 6 maybe this year. And that's brilliant, because you still did quite well, all things considered, but you've got a long way to go. And the line-out is a good example of something technical that we need to work on. But, you know, if I was Scott Beaman, I'm pretty happy. He's done a really good job. And there are some really obvious areas to work on. I mean, what more do you want?
Yeah. I mean, that just talks to what we were saying before we started recording, Anna, is for the, you know, the players based in Ireland. Obviously, the UK-based players will go back, you know, they go back to playing in the PWR. But when is the next time the Ireland Blakes players will have a game? And you were talking about the fact, again, and we mentioned it last week, you know, we had a brilliant, brilliant AIL final at the Aviva Stadium yesterday. It is so obvious these players need more as much game time as possible before this World Cup next year.
Absolutely. And like, you know, the feeling of like finishing up a Six Nations, you know, celebrating with your team or commiserating with your team and then gathering yourself to go back to your club, like that's a great feeling. Your club welcomes you with open arms, like brings you back in, picks you up if you're down, or allows you to kick on with your confidence. The fact that the AIL is over now and none of the Irish-based players get to do that, like what are they going to do? Where's their focus now? Like in their minds, what are they thinking about? You know, for us when we played Six Nations, we were able to turn around and think about Bowes and go back down the road, back down to Limerick. And you know, it really means a lot. The Premiership girls going back to their clubs now, that'll mean a lot to them. They can kick on. They'll be presented with, you know, the scenarios that appeared in Six Nations. Like, you know, when you're playing week in, week out, and like I've played in both the AIL and the Premiership, so I feel like I can talk about this. And it's not always easy because there's so many different opinions about what angles you should take here. But like, I know that the AIL and like this product that we have exists here. Week in, week out rugby, coming up against the decisions, scenarios, losing players, the conditions, the wind, that, you know, tackling that week in, week out. And as well, if you think of like the 10 teams across the AIL, all the players going back to their clubs, that's 10 opportunities for different groups of players for like leadership, for experience, for working with coaches, working on your own set piece in your club. That resource is there and exists, and the Irish players don't get to go back into that now. And there were also, if you watched Chisa Muguiro, who had an unbelievable game yesterday, and she won player of the match, and she said that she had the plays written on her hand because she actually hasn't been able to train with Bowes because she's been in the Irish setup and training with them. It just, to me, is really sad because the AIL is very close to my heart. It's a brilliant competition and can be a brilliant competition. Yes, I know there are faults, but there's faults in the Premiership as well. Like there's teams getting hockeyed in the Premiership, you know, big score lines, the teams that are at the bottom and then the teams that are at the top would still look at the players that it produces, you know? So there's a lot of like, oh, but so-and-so isn't good enough or these are, yeah, of course they're not now, but that's there to be worked on. It already exists. It doesn't need to be built from the ground up. Like, it just blows my mind that we're not using it as best we could.
Ali, I mean, they'll say like, you know, they have the Challenge Cup there. They hope this is a product that will improve over the kind of next few years. What do you make, though, of what Anna says there and about utilising what's there on our doorstep?
Yeah, but I don't disagree, but I think it's a moot argument because they've decided not to do that. So
yeah.
The problem I think we have is what the RFU seem to have decided, again, not that clear because we haven't had someone come and tell us this, is that the provincial route, semi-pro provinces eventually, or one or two anyway, is going to be the route through which the Irish players kind of move into a high-performance training environment day-to-day, and they play in a Celtic Challenge Cup, and they may play in a URC-style comp, and they may play in a Champions Cup. The problem is, of course, none of those exist yet. One of those exists yet, and it's a small number of games against second-string Welsh and Scottish teams, and that I can't see that changing. Maybe Wales will, certainly not before the World Cup. So there is a time lag between what I think the RFU want to do and what's happening. And into this comes the vortex of 18 months to prep for a World Cup. Well, if that's the product, if that's the system we're going to use, what happens between now and September? Because I think if you speak to high performance experts, you know, the people behind the scenes who put programs together so athletes can properly develop, they'll say you need two things. You need a daily training environment that's of the standard. And clearly the RFU think the clubs, there's not enough clubs who can provide that. And you need regular game time. And both of those things now are question marks for this Irish team, right? So the RFU may say through our system, we are providing high performance day-to-day training, but they're not getting the games. So I don't know if there is a short-term solution here where they suddenly line up a plethora of games which are of a standard, but I don't think they can. Because as I say, we're kind of waiting for competitions to get to come to fruition, which haven't even been developed yet. So I think that is an interesting challenge for David Humphreys and others to that's, but like, you're right, like the fact that we don't know when the Irish girls are going to next play a game is quite, you know, mad. I mean, that's not true for any of the other Six Nations teams. We know exactly when they'll all be playing. They'll all be playing either this weekend or when they get a rest in the weekends after that in their major competition. So that is a genuine point of debate and discussion that needs to be resolved, I think.
Yeah, I mean, last year the Interpols were in August. It was actually brought up in the press conference with Scott Beaman after the game, if there's any summer tests, if they can organise them on the line, they, you know, I don't know, but it certainly would be a good idea. Another point going into a World Cup year is what will happen when it comes to the sevens players. You know, obviously they've got the Paris Olympics next year, and actually Scott Beaman said after the game on Saturday, you know, that the likes of Katie Corrigan, you know, Aoife Wafer, who played sevens, you know, they could certainly put their hands up for a selection for the Irish sevens team. But next year has got to be completely 15s focused. And we've seen the likes of Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, you know, Stacey Flood, Lucy Mulhall, what they can do in the 15s programme. Anna, what do you think, like, that, you know, when it comes to next year now, that the sevens, how could they work that? What is the best route there, do you think?
Well, the Olympics, I'm presuming now that, yeah, that's in the next few months. So that's this summer. Will they then release everyone back to 15's program, or do they, you know, do the kind of the same where Scott Beaman like handpicks like who he wants? It seemed to work out well in the end, even though, you know, it was clear at the beginning that the sevens girls needed a bit of time. And like you say, Ali, like learning on the job, which isn't ideal. There'll be no time for learning on the job in WXV1 if you're looking for some kind of, you know, performance there, because, you know, again, you could learn on the job in the AIL or, you know, something like where you're playing 15s a lot more. Come the summer, I think now you're right. I think they'll put all their kind of 15s baggage aside. This isn't what I'm hoping for. I think this is what could happen. I mean, like, phew, okay, that's done for now. We'll focus on sevens and then just let the 15s program kind of tip away. I don't, like, that would be a huge mistake. They need to, like, obviously keep ramped up both programs, you know, and if there are players going to come across from 15s to sevens, at least there's a bit of time then to get back into it by the beginning of next season. it's not an easy one, and I'm sure whatever I think is going to work is not going to be what the IRB think, because, you know, it's always been like that, like different players in and out at different stages, which I was, you know, it's not always easy to comprehend. But as long as they're transparent, like Scott Beamont has been honest about who he's picking and why, I think that's really helpful. So continuous, like, kind of transparency is going to be really helpful for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because we all know that the prioritization of sevens has been a David Nussafora driven goal and interest. And he is going, obviously, almost gone. So what happens to the program in that world where there's a new, you know, someone else leading that the whole thing is interesting. I think if Ireland win a medal at the Olympics, you could see, which is possible, you know, that team is very, very talented and very good. You could see a world in which it's a priority again. But look, the schedule works better this time. You've got an Olympics, then you've got a World Cup. And I think the World Cup being so close to home is a big opportunity for the IRFU to really give exposure, visibility to their athletes, their 15s athletes. So I would, and then the other thing we haven't talked about is what do players want to do? So, you know, after the game against France, Ellie Kildon said, I want to play in the Olympics, actually. So I'm going to try now and transfer over there. So, you know, some players may not want to do that. I don't know what Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe wants to do. She might say, I only want to be a sevens player. I only want to be. So there's a whole load of variables that we need to think about. But I think what happens in Paris to the team will be one factor. And then, you know, the way in which sevens is considered by the IRFU may be changing. I don't know.
So just to wrap on the Ireland's Six Nations. So obviously, two wins over Wales and France, the defeats to France, Wales and Scotland, the defeats to France, Italy and England. You know, we saw the green shoots in that opening game against France in Le Mans, which seems around 10 million years ago. Then there was the frustrating defeat to Italy, and it was such a roller coaster of those final 3 weeks. The 5-try, 36-5 win over Wales and Cork, the 88-10 hammering by England at Twickenham, and then, of course, last weekend with the 15-12. Overall, Anna, how would you grade it? In terms of performance, you know, we did see improvements in performance, that the line out for sure. And I do think as well, a specialist coach needs to come in, and they need to even try and organise game time with the UK-based players. Something, this is a problem that hasn't been sorted even from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's important to look back at how we were feeling beforehand, because it was so like, oh my God, what is going to happen? I think if we were told this, you know, if we opened up an envelope and saw it, we would have been like, oh wow, really? Okay, yeah, we'll take that. In terms of if you compare how we were assessing things last year, yes, of course, it's progress. And like, not just the fact that we came third and, you know, had to, like, by the skin of our teeth came third. But, you know, the green shoots, like you say, like very positive and consistent performances from some of those young players. The co-captaincy from Sam and Adele has worked really well. You know, apart from the England blip, you know, they won both times that they were on the field together, helping each other, backing each other up. Lena coming back in, which is again something that we didn't know before, has been so huge from the outside, and from someone who, you know, went through that at the time with Lena, and to see her, we were screaming and my family were screaming, you know, at the telly, because we knew what that meant for Lena to get her name on the try sheet at the weekend. Like, that's huge. It is so huge. I can't even, again, like, words are failing me about what we have actually, what actually has happened for this team to have Lena back in to qualify for the World Cup. Yes, I know it could be too much too soon, but actually there's part of me that's almost like, I don't care. It feels like, and I kind of want to feel this way, even though I know that there's tough days ahead. You're wondering, was it all worth it? Was everything worth it? Is it actually going to count now? All the stuff that went on and the reviews and making the reviews public and everything that the players have gone through. It's a shine. It's a bit of like a glimmer of hope to say that yes, the cycle has been broken. Things are changing. I'll take it. I'm overall, I'm really happy with how things went.
Yeah, agreed on all of that front. I think, you know, we forget that it wasn't even 3 years ago that this programme hit rock bottom. You know, that letter, and, you know, I was talking to Katie Daly McLean, the ex-England captain, this weekend, and I was saying, you know, a bunch of girls in this Irish team right now signed that letter. Both co-captains did, and several others. So that was really not a long time, 2.5 years or whatever it is. So I think we're emerging into the light again. But what we're finding as we come into that, you know, as we look up to that light, is that teams have moved away from us. England have certainly gone off into the distance. I think France are way ahead of us as well. But the good thing is that cluster of four, Scotland, Ireland, Italy, Wales, all are in, you know, those games at the weekend, that was the best round of games by a mile. So tight, both games with the other two went down to the wire. So we're moving in the right spaces for where we should be right now. But I think the great thing is, you know, if you think about the things that didn't go well, I mean, we lost 7 lineouts at the weekend. That's crazy in an international game. So yeah, lineouts for sure. Decision making. We made some, you know, really silly decisions yesterday. We did the same in England. We did the same against Italy. Those things are, you know, coachable, right? But you need to be playing games at a high level. So all back to the point, you know. So, and I think for me, yes, I know Aoife Wafer is getting a bit of headlines and she deserves it. But Dan O'Brien, you know, her evolution, you can see her learning in every game. She took a step forward, a step back, another step forward. We now also have a very reliable kicker, which we often haven't had, you know, since maybe Niamh Briggs was around. So I think that does make a difference in tight games. And we might not play tight games in WXV1, but we will in the Six Nations next year. We likely will in the World Cup. So there's a lot to be happy with while knowing there's still quite a way to go. But, like, you know, that's good.
Yeah. And even her conversion for the Katie Corrigan try the last day, I thought was a great kick because we were just kind of sitting behind her. So, Ali, you were in Bordeaux for England's win over France, Six Nations title in a row. I saw your very interesting tweet earlier that England would be the first country in the world to start making money from women's rugby. And it is because they have seen this opportunity first.
Yeah, so Bill Sweeney, the RFU CEO, did an interview with some of the journalists who were out there on Friday. And, you know, he was asked about the ticket sales and sort of saying, because it's very cheap, right, to go and watch England at the moment at Twickenham comparably to how much it is to watch the men. And he was sort of saying, look, we probably priced it low deliberately, but we, you know, the value is going up. You know, the product is very good. The event is very good. So the point I was trying to make is, people don't knock England, but people are very envious of what they've got at their disposal. And people always say, oh, they've got more players and more money and they can do these things that we can't do. But one thing they did long before anyone else is recognize that one day this would be the kind of product through which the game grew, participation numbers grew, and they would generate some revenue from it. And they're getting there faster because it was brilliant in France, a record crowd, 28,000, you know, but England are now getting 45 plus to Twickenham. So they've already moved on and surpassed France. So yeah, look, England were magnificent. I personally, you know, people said, oh, France came back in the second half. The game was over. England did a very professional, thorough job. They're just sensational at the moment to watch. They kill teams off when there's a sniff. You know, I think France scored a try in the second half and you thought, ooh, maybe. And Alex Matthews scored like a minute later. It was like England just went, nope. And they know what to do and they know how to do it. But yeah, they're a fantastic team. I think their challenge, as ever, is can they beat New Zealand in a World Cup final? And we won't know that till the World Cup final, because I think, Anna, like, if you've been following New Zealand's progress, they're still in transition, new coaches, new contracts. I don't think we'll know. They like peak at World Cup finals, right? But yeah, look, England are miles ahead and it's a model through which we can learn from, if not replicate. But, you know, you can't but be impressed by them on and off the field.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's so, what I really enjoyed about England was how they just changed up everything to get even better again. But they've learned that, you know, they can't just keep coming up with the same formula. And like you said, Ali, you know, New Zealand came on tour to England a year out from the World Cup and got absolutely walloped by England. So there's no way you can predict what New Zealand are up to ever. But the fact that it's in England, New Zealand are traveling, oh my God, it'll be a spicy World Cup final if that's how it works out. Like, let's all hope that that's the final that women's rugby deserves. But England have impressed me with how they've just changed everything. And then when they need to, they'll use their maul, but only if they need to. Do you know, they've got so many other avenues and they just seem to be really enjoying it as well. And it seems like kind of a different prep. I know before the last World Cup, they had a lot of pressure on themselves, you know, a year out, 2 years out. And then, of course, COVID kind of changed all that as well. But like 2 years out from the World Cup, if they dropped a ball in training, you know, the reports were that like, well, this isn't going to win a World Cup, you know, 2 years out. So I think that that's not how they're thinking, although they've got, you know, they're the side of their eye on, you know, the prize and their periphery. They're very focused on the competition within the squad and just personally, like how they can get better themselves. And it's just, it seems to be a really good environment. And I'm really happy for them to just, you know, be leading this. We just need everyone else to, God, I don't know when, but somehow catch up.
Yeah, no, for sure. But look, we do have that World Cup to look forward to, Anna. And you know, it's just mad, like, when you think back to 2017, you know what I mean? And the whole buzzword, wasn't it, was legacy and sure, look what happened. But Anna, this time now, and I was writing about it this morning, like, it is such a golden opportunity with the World Cup on in England to really mobilise the momentum now around this team. We twice had record-breaking figures in attendances. You know, definitely there are going to be challenges ahead because, of course, they're going to be away to Scotland, Italy and Wales in the Six Nations. Next year, they will have England and France at home. But what would you like to see happening now in terms of, like, I think, for example, even stuff like, I think there needs to be more cross-pollination between the men's team and the women's team. But like, what would you kind of like to see just to really start building that momentum before the World Cup, just even on a publicity PR level as well?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, you know, I know it's not always a good idea to go looking at comments on online because there's a lot of poisonous stuff out there, but I've seen that change as well, even from when we used to play and all the comments were like, sure, they're useless. Why would women be playing rugby? La, 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 all this stuff, you know. But it doesn't just exist online. That reflects then, like, if you know, that those conversations are going on in clubhouses and in pubs and things like that. But if you look at, like, the kind of conversation that's happening online now, when they posted yesterday they qualified, there were so many people like rushing to the comments to say, well, I hope they're funded properly and I hope that the RFU is looking after them and I hope that this, like, people who know the story here a lot better than we used to and who are contributing to this conversation of, like, this needs to be good now. We want this to be good. Like, the public are just waiting to get on this bandwagon, you know, and they want the RFU to be supported. Yeah, I agree with that, that, you know, the men's and women's environment, like, showing, you know, showing that they're kind of held in equal esteem, that's important. And, like, a lot of it was funny. Did you see Jamie George came and did some throwing with the Red Roses? Yeah. And then everyone was like, sure, what has he won? And that was really interesting, but, like, good conversation piece. And, you know, but with the men, you know, if you consider where they've come from and they've all been playing since they were five, they've been in school systems, they've got so much knowledge to share. I'd love to see, you know, them contributing to this journey as well for the girls. I'm thinking about it now. I'm like, could they organize a quick interpro now while the girls are over, like, playing in the Prem? Could we do that? Is that something that the 15s players can just pick up and you know, get people from the provinces, like, on board and kind of filtering up then to support? Because it's huge, you know, and World Cup in England next year, like, it's such a huge opportunity. Well, I don't want us to fluff it somehow.
Yeah, it's like exactly that. Like, why not come up with something interesting and innovative so the girls get back playing? Because I think too often women's rugby is stifled by this kind of mindset that it must do the things in the order the men's game did it in. And, you know, I know some people get frustrated that, you know, the kind of provincial route for the team, you know, for the players. And some people say, well, that works for the men, but, you know, etc. So I think for me as well, just a really, really smart strategy around how you market and promote the team and the girls to mobilise kind of youth interest and do that differently. You know, one of the, when England started to be called the Red Roses, I remember thinking, ugh, you know, but actually that works really brilliantly. They've got their own kind of identity. They've got, they're different. It's very fun. It's very kind of interesting. The girls are very open. And you've got a player like Ellie Kildon, who I think is on the verge of becoming a kind of household name over here almost, because the coverage around her in recent weeks has been really different. So, you know, where, you know, how do we mark the Irish women's rugby team out as different, as offering a different demographic, a different fan base, as bringing something to Irish rugby, which is growing Irish rugby and isn't taking away from any other piece of the pie? And, like, you know, making sure we've got good marketeers thinking about that. what's the brand of the team? Who in the team do we build this around? Is it Dan O'Brien? Is it Bavin Parsons? Whoever? Who resonates with kids? You know, really thinking about that. And then I think it's leveraging off the World Cup. So it's in England. People will go. Certainly the time zone means that we can all watch it even if you're not there. So that's good. And lastly, I would just say, and this is a more of a me personal thing, is like, just say to the RFU, just be transparent. Don't be afraid to tell people what you're planning to do. We're still, you know, I went on a podcast here last week and I knew they were going to ask me loads about the Irish setup. And I send out a lot of texts to people in Ireland and, you know, people like Anna, but lots of people who are influential and know things. None of them really knew what the plan was. You know, people sort of said, I think we're going to have semi-professional provinces. I think the plan is, like, don't be afraid to set it out or to be ambitious and say, this is what we would like to do. Come and have the debate with us, because I think none of us really trust the paper on which the strategies of old have been written on, because you remember, Sinead, the one where it said here are our targets and sure every single one of them was missed. So it's just like, don't be afraid to kind of come out and say, hey, look, we're exploring a different way of doing this. So I think just have an honest conversation with the, you know, the women's rugby stakeholders and the media, and not this kind of, there's a very them and us vibe in Irish rugby, and it's unnecessary, because there is goodwill, just as you said, Anna, around this team. And I think as well, lastly, sorry, this has turned into a very long rant, but I think the world of women's sport is changing at a pace in which sometimes national and governing bodies don't get. So, you know, the way in which people are really interested now in reading about and watching and engaging with the players, that has moved almost faster than the infrastructure of the game. And so we just got to catch up with that and make the most of it. And into that world comes the importance of transparency and marketing and so on. But look, there's loads we could be doing. And now we've got the bones of a young team who look like they are, you know, going to become better. And how exciting, I think.
Anna, there's so much in what Ali just said there. I feel like we could stay on for the next few hours. But anything in particular that you want to pick up on there?
No, I agree. And Ali, I could have listened to you all day, like talking about that and brainstorming and stuff. But like, I have to agree that like, I always feel like, you know, public enemy number one when I talk about things that I think the IRFU should be doing, or, you know, sharing my ideas. And, you know, it's out of the best interests of, you know, Irish rugby that I feel. It's not an attack on anyone, like, you know. And I do think that this transparency is very important, because as well, we know times have changed, personnel has changed, like, we hope. And like, it's not you know, people ask these questions because things didn't go well, you know, and that's fine as long as we learn from them. And you're right, like, the transparency is so important, because if not, these conversations keep happening then, like, oh, why not this? Why not that? Like, if we know what's happening, we can back it. We can understand it. The players can. And it's not, you know, like you say, us going to the players, like, what do you think? Or, you know, that it's really honest. And I think, you know, from a team, they spoke about within themselves, they've been honest. If that can kind of then extend outside of that, like, it'll be really easy for us to talk about it, to look at the plans, to know what that means for the pathways. It's very exciting. Again, like I say, I feel afraid to say, like, okay, this is a really good thing now, just because of how things have gone. And that's not my fault that I'm like that. It's how things went. And for me as a player, it was very difficult. And like, so that's why I am the way I am, in terms of like, oh, I don't know about this now, or this scares me. Like, even when, you know, the squad changes up, that makes me nervous. I'm like, oh my God, did something happen? That's not Scott Beeman's fault. That's not anyone's fault. It's how things used to be. And to understand that people are kind of healing from this process. So there's going to be kind of like judgment. But Ali is exactly like you said, as long as they're transparent and they tell us what the plans are, then you could go, okay, now we can back it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And before we go, just a word on the women's AIL final yesterday. This was a brilliant game. ULVOs beat Railway 48-38, 14 tries. Chisholm Aguero scored a hat-trick. Lindsay Peat was absolutely incredible. I texted her earlier and I was like, God, if I was Scott Beeman, I'd be on to you and getting you back in the international game. But they really put on a show yesterday, and well done to Bowles.
Oh, it was so brilliant. And to have it in the Aviva. And I was like, you know, like watching through my fingers, because I was like, oh, goodness. And, you know, the width of the pitch seemed to kind of catch the players out, because they didn't actually, there was a lot of, for both teams, like overlaps, opportunities for overlaps squandered. There actually could have been more tries, even considering the high score. But was so brilliant and it got so close. And I was thinking that we might have lost it, especially looking at, you know, how good Railway are, especially with someone like Lindsay Peat on the loose. And just the fact that Bows were able to just dig deep and get another couple of tries. Very emotional, like huge for Fiona Hayes, mm-hmm. Who's now, you know, winning AIL coach and player. Fiona Reedy, who played her last game for the club after 14 years. And, you know, we lost John Keane during the year, who was like the heart and soul of our club. He's been at every match. He supported us so much. What this would have meant to him and that extra kind of emotion that was there around that was so wonderful to watch. I wasn't able. I was like bawling, crying on my couch and just with the whole qualification for the World Cup. And, you know, seeing Bows bring, you know, the cup back down to Limerick, it was just such a wonderful weekend. And those girls, like, who've really, like, putting their hand up, like, I want to be seen. I want to be part of, you know, there's a World Cup next year. There's girls putting their hands up to me, like, I want to get into that squad as well, which is what we need.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely brilliant. Well, that is the end of our Six Nations podcast in the Women's Six Nations. Anna and Ali, your expertise, your knowledge, your opinions have been absolutely incredible. Brilliant to listen to. Thank you so much for being on this podcast with me. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've had to watch a lot of rugby over the last 6 weeks, but no, it's been brilliant. And, you know, for me, I'm not based in Ireland anymore. So feeling that connection to the team again and kind of reaching out to people. It's been great fun. You're both fantastic. So hopefully we'll do it again next year.
Big year.
It's been such a pleasure, Sinead. Thanks so much. And like, you know, again, compared to what we had to talk about last year, what we had to talk about this year, I just hoping that it's an upward step again and next year is going to be even bigger and better. So
Thank you so much again. We have so much to look forward to, obviously, next year. But for now, thanks for listening.